Silicon Valley has disrupted the labor market with its innovation and automation. At what point does the Valley need to pay for its sins? Techonomics host Jason Middleton has a discussion with a distinguished professor and tech industry thought leader about a lack of social morality coming from giant tech companies. That discussion starts now.
Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. Coming up is the second part of my chat with Vivek Wadhwa about artificial intelligence disrupting the labor force and society on the whole, really. Vivek is a distinguished fellow at Carnegie Mellon University based here in Silicon Valley. Something that comes up when thought leaders discuss AI is universal basic income, UBI. Now, we've covered different aspects of UBI on Techonomics with different guests over the past year or so. But Vivek is more critical of the concept being a monthly stipend from the government for everyone.
So when you don't have any social stature, when you don't have to go to work and meet people and interact with people, what do you do with your life? I mean, are all people going to sit back and say, okay, we want to learn how to play music now or seek enlightenment? I don't think so.
If you'd like to hear the first part of our chat, please check out the podcast at kgoradio.com/techonomics, or you can search Techonomics on Stitcher or Audio Boom or iTunes. After Vivek and I talk, we're going to look at Elon Musk's updated take on artificial intelligence and robots, as well as Sir Dr. Stephen Hawking's recent opinions on artificial intelligence. First up, though, it's me and Vivek. Vivek, I want to talk solutions with you. Is it something that the tech sector can do? Like, if you're listed, it should be an expectation you have a director of social impact or even a C-level somebody. Should you have philosophers or ethicists on staff to inform your products as you roll them out? Because I don't think we're going to stop them from rolling out products, but we could maybe help them roll out responsible products.
This is why the debate between Elon and Mark Zuckerberg is really important, because if you accept what Mark Zuckerberg says, it's not a problem, there's nothing to worry about here, then you do nothing. If you accept what Elon Musk says, that, hey, we're unleashing new terrors, we're summoning the demon, right, and so on, then you have to take responsibility. I agree with Elon that we have to take responsibility. This is just like the UBI thing, that we can't say that, hey, there's this magical solution to this whole problem. We got to worry about what we're creating here. We have to worry about runaway AI. We have to worry about what happens if this does get into autopilot and decides to learn everything on its own and considers the human race to be unnecessary. Now, that's the extreme here. Now, I don't believe it's going to happen. But the fact is, we need to be worried about this stuff. We need to have the ethicists on staff. We need to be programming the kill switches into our software. We need to build the security mechanisms into it. We need to be worried about this stuff, my friend.
You are not just an ivory tower academician, because you can do that. That's obvious. You're down here with us, and you've got a new book out, and you know these robots, and you know the technology you've been dealing with. So please tell me a little bit about the reception, your new book about interacting, human interaction with technology. How is that being received?
The book is called Driving the Driverless Car, How Our Technology Choices Will Make the Future. I've been very optimistic about technology, about the amazing things it makes possible. But over the last 3 or 4 years, I've been learning about the dark sides of it. We just talked about the killer AI. We talked about the jobless future. There are many, many other things to worry about. The book looks at all of these technologies. It educates the reader on what they are and what they can do for us. And then it also posits that, look, we have a choice now between the darkness of Mad Max or the bright future of Star Trek. And we have to make some important choices over here. We have to figure out, what's right, what's wrong, what's ethical, what's not ethical. And it's our job. It's not the job of our politicians or our corporate executives. It's for us to tell our business leaders, our corporate leaders, for us to tell our politicians, most importantly, what we consider to be right, what we consider to be ethical. And we need to now make these difficult choices and work towards building the Star Trek future. So the book is written so that anyone can understand it. I've tried to keep it in the simplest possible language, mm-hmm, so that grandma could understand it, as well as junior, as well as the techies of Silicon Valley. And then to present them with these choices and say, look, let's figure this out. Let's make sure we build Star Trek.
In the answer you have there, you have technologists as well as politicians and business leaders. So, but politicians specifically, regulation always lags behind innovation. Is there a snackable way? Is there a piece by piece, brick by brick way we can start to address this that you see is actually like rubber hitting road right now? Because, boy, getting anything through Congress is impossible. But getting into politicians to understand AI may be just like mind numbingly impossible.
Well, we have to make choices. For example, take Uber. Now, Uber was not legal in Washington, D.C., when 60% of the congressional staffers started using it, and suddenly they realized that they had to legalize it, right? And Uber basically launched ground-up campaigns after showing the people what they could do. Now, most recently, we figured out that Uber is a bad company, that its ethics, its sexism, its value system is completely messed up. So people have started boycotting Uber. So those are choices we make. You know, drones, the next 3 or 4 years, we're going to be having our morning latte delivered to us via drone. So those drones will also have cameras on them. They'll be able to see what's happening around them. They'll be recording everything that happens. Now, we have a choice to make. Do we now want to get the benefit of having drones coming to our backyard, or do we now want to ban them? Every technology, we will have to make choices about whether we want them. The way the laws work is the laws are codified ethics. Ethics are a consensus developed by society over a period of time. So we have to understand what all of these technologies are and decide what's ethical. And then we got to tell our politicians what we want to be in the laws. That's the process. That's the way it must be, because that's the way that this is the way, you know, consensus is built and laws are created. So it's the right way of doing things, but it starts with us learning. All of us need to learn this stuff. And this is what the theme of the book, Driving the Driverless Car, is.
Usually I get review copies before interviews about books, but this one I went ahead and bought. So, and I encourage everybody else, if you care about this like we do, I encourage you to read the book. It really is accessible. It hit all the points that you need to really be thinking about, and maybe there's a course of action in there for you. Dr. Wadhwa, thank you for your time this morning. I went a little bit over, so thank you for indulging us.
Thank you, Jason.
That was Vivek Wadhwa. He is a distinguished fellow at Carnegie Mellon University. He's based here in Silicon Valley. His book, Driving the Driverless Car, is a useful explanation of the technologies that are already disrupting society and what we can do to help our leaders get their stuff together around these disruptions. One of these disruptions is a headline grabber, the idea that robots could advance to the point where they don't need humans, or even more dramatic, when they go all RoboCop on us. Now, this is a B-movie and rather extreme and violent, of course, but the discussion is rather real, because if artificially intelligent machines can improve themselves exponentially, well, theoretically at least, that could lead to the inadequacy of humans and maybe the unnecessary humanoid in the room.
Dick, I'm very disappointed.
I'm sure it's only a glitch, a temporary setback.
You call this a glitch?
Engineer, technologist, and man of many side hustles, Elon Musk, wants us to hit the pause button on sentient robotics until we can get a handle on their capabilities. Musk is among a group of 116 founders of robotics and artificial intelligence companies who are calling on the United Nations to ban autonomous weapons. Here's Mr. Musk speaking with Vanity Fair.
I don't think most people understand just how quickly machine intelligence is advancing. It's much faster than almost anyone realizes, even within Silicon Valley, and certainly outside Silicon Valley, people really have no idea. So,
why is that dangerous?
If there's a super intelligent, particularly if it's engaged in recursive self-improvement, if there's some digital super intelligence and its optimization or utility function is something that's detrimental to humanity, then it will have a very bad effect. It could be just something like getting rid of spam email or something. And it's like, concludes, well, the best way to get rid of spam is to get rid of humans.
But why would we lose control of our machines? There are no data points showing that our connection to machine has ever been loosened.
Actually, I think the thing to do would be to plot the progress of digital intelligence versus time, and then to maybe curve fit or extrapolate that progress and see where that leads.
But you're talking about machines that are not just intelligent, but have intentionality. Is that right?
They have the intention of their utility function,
which
will
be
absolute.
Which is what we programmed in, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But it can have unintended consequences.
Musk and the 116 other signatories on a letter to the United Nations fleshed out their position. The open letter to the UN was released at an artificial intelligence conference in Melbourne, Australia, ahead of a UN meeting of government experts on autonomous weapons. The Australia-based professor who helped organize the letter, Toby Walsh, warned that artificial intelligence can be used in autonomous weapons to industrialize war. He urged a UN ban on killer robots, similar to the one on chemical weapons that already exists. Now, Stephen Hawking recently spoke to the BBC about his concerns. Here's a nutshell.
Now, when you watch software engineers and machine learning experts at work, as they have been on this project, how far along the path to artificial intelligence do you think we are?
The primitive forms of artificial intelligence we already have proved very useful. But I think the development of full artificial intelligence could spell the end of the human race. Once humans develop artificial intelligence, it would take off on its own and redesign itself at an ever-increasing rate. Humans, who are limited by slow biological evolution, couldn't compete and would be superseded.
Thank you for those fascinating insights. Thank you very much, Professor Hawking.
For links about this topic and all of our sourcing and references, please check out kgoradio.com/techonomics. Just look for the story that goes with this week's show. Open it, click like crazy. Coming up after the break, college football season is underway, but rather than extol the virtues of on-field prowess and rivalries, we're going to look at two different angles. What are football fans eating and ordering for delivery, and just how much are tickets to those big games going to cost? That's next on Techonomics. I'm Jason Middleton. Please stick around.